Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You are joined today by just the two of us. Our squad is as thin as the Albion's at the moment, but we're here to have a good chinwag. So let's welcome to the show Dagan. How are you doing, Dagan?
Hey, thanks, Joe. Always good to be on Albion Obsessed, even on a day that is less than satisfactory. But I'm doing okay. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's a weird one. Like, you know, we should be beating teams like Burnley and this, that, and the other. But then, you know, they're fighting for their lives down at the bottom of the table. So you have to take some perspective, and that's what we're going to aim to try and give the listeners, viewers, however you might be consuming your Albion Obsessed content today. But let's start with some good news that happened throughout the week, that Jack Hinshelwood has just penned a new deal, I think, to 2028, Dagan? Is that right?
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, so I think that's absolutely massive news. How do you react to that, Dagan?
I'm pleased. It's good to have him signed. He was not a guy I imagine was going elsewhere imminently. You know, perhaps his eyes get wide if he has another year like he was off to having this season. I mean, I think you could argue he's been our best fullback. This season. Given that that's not his natural position, that's quite a claim, but I think it's a fair one. Purvis has struggled. Veltman has struggled. Lamptey has been intermittently okay, but mostly injured. Milner has not looked great there. Who am I forgetting? Barco, we haven't seen. He's yet another not ready guy. Not ready. what else? Am I forgetting? Who else am I forgetting? I feel like I'm forgetting someone.
Igor.
I haven't seen a ton of him at left back, but he's been fine. But I think Hinshelwood has been certainly the most productive in terms of goals and assists of that group. Purvis had two lightning strikes, but it's otherwise looked more pedestrian this year than we would have imagined. So, no, it's great to get Hinshelwood back. I'm eager to see him recovered and well and back in the blue and white stripes.
Yeah, 100%. Really, really pleased to see him sign. Obviously, a local lad who's come through the youth ranks from age 10 all the way up to the senior squad. And when he was sort of in and around the squad at the end of last season, we were sort of thinking, could it be his breakthrough year? And then was included a lot in the summer series in the US, which you gratefully got to see two games of, which was awesome. I think it's credit to him, credit to the work he's put in to get to where he needs to be. And it's credit to the club as well, because, you know, having a youth prospect come through and stay with the club and believe in the project and you know, live on that Hinshelwood name who has been quite, you know, sort of famous in the Brighton area is really good. So, yeah, and I agree with what you say. I think you saying that this is not his natural position, people want to see him in the central midfield role. I don't really want to take him out of there anymore. I do genuinely believe he is our best right back and could be a very, very good fullback going forwards. So if that's a career shift that De Zerbi has seen for him and it's something that he's enjoying doing, because, as you say, assists, goals, they've all fallen for him. It's not like he's just defending or just getting stuck in defensively. It's a role where he's allowed to express all of his talents all in one go. I'm really inspired by that sort of new contract that he's got, and hopefully we can see him next season. I think, was it Mark O'Mahony who signed a new deal as well? And obviously came on for his debut.
That's right. That's right. And got his hands dirty trying to drag somebody back there at the end. I don't know if he got a card or not for that, but he certainly picked up a foul. We've seen great things playing with the second team. He's done quite well. Scored a lot of goals. Another Irishman like our young Evan Ferguson. Excited to see more of him. He looked bigger today than I expected him to look out there. I'm not sure what his size is, but he looked bigger in stature than I expected. Do you know the details there? What are your thoughts on it?
I don't know the exact details of his height, but he did look quite big, quite physical. A player that could easily adapt to the Premier League if he's given more time. And I think given the circumstances of our squad and as we go towards the end of the season, I think he will be given more time. I think there will be opportunities for a Cam Pupion or a Marco Maione to come on and really make a stance going into next season, and possibly be a part of another pre-season tour and make the stamp like Jack Inchelwood has done. It's good to see the club keeping those doors open, but I think we're sort of forced, really, because we're having to include these young players on our bench to make a full Premier League squad, which is not ideal with the injuries that we've had, which everyone knows about. And we'll get into another injury that we picked up today, which is not ideal at all going forwards for the last 5-6 games of the Premier League season. Let's not dabble too much and ignore the fact that we drew 1-1 to Burnley today, Dagan. Some good news is that we started with Bart Verbruggen in goal again. So has the goalkeeper rotation stopped?
That certainly seems to be the case, much to my relief. I wish it came with results. Poor Bart has not gotten a lot of goal support. He's had a number of clean sheets. And today, you know, one unfortunate goal allowed. Although it's hard to pin today's goal on him. He couldn't play the ball with his hands, had to rush out. I mean, otherwise left with a very easy one-on-one for, I can't recall who was there to punch it in potentially. Brandon. But Baleba just mistouched the ball, playing it back to him, clearly an attempt at a pass. So no way Bruggen could touch it with his hands and let one in. But I think he's been the all-around better keeper for quite some time now. You know, Jason Steele is a quality human being and been a great, you know, servant to the club, as I know you guys are fond of saying. But I think he's our number two. And I think it's okay. It's okay to be the number two goalkeeper for a Premier League club. It doesn't mean you're awful. And he's certainly not someone I would dread having out there ever. I just think Verbruggen is his additional size, his additional length. And I don't think there's a lot of a difference in between the two of them with the distribution. Where you might have argued there, Steele was ahead of him in that category early in the year. Given that, I think it makes sense to play the younger guy who is theoretically your future, or if he's not your future, find out and move on to the next young prospect. We've got a bunch of young goalkeepers in our system. So if it's not Bart, let's find out who it is. But I think Bart has looked strong so far and acquitted himself well.
Do you think that maybe plays on Bart's and Jason's mind that they do have a plethora of sort of young goalkeepers coming through that they could well lose their spot if they don't perform as we expect them to?
I mean, that's a fair question. I mean, ultimately they're here and those guys aren't, right? I mean, so I think that's always the case. You're wondering about who's the next young talent, or I think in Brighton's case, like, who are we going to bring in? I mean, those guys that you named, for example, you know, O'Mahony and Pupion, like, sure, they could get that opportunity, but I think it's more likely that they don't get that opportunity right away and that we bring someone in who's readier. I think most of us would hope that's the case. Now, with the goalkeepers, I think we have some capable guys right now. And, you know, I think Rushworth is in a good spot for him. And I think he probably would seem to be the next in line. Some might say Sherpin, but he's been battling some pretty significant injuries and missed most of the season, I think with a knee injury, if I'm not mistaken. He's a big guy, but again, I'm not sure any of the guys in our system as yet have the ball playing ability of Verbruggen or Steele. And as long as De Zerbi's with us, it would seem those guys have a firm handle on the roles. But also I haven't watched a ton to say otherwise about the other guys, but at least that's my initial thought. What about you? What are your thoughts about the pressure that might be on those guys from those external, players within our system?
I always wonder, first of all, about Tom McGill. I think he's sort of 22, 23-ish. So he's getting on towards not being a part of our under-23 system and being a number three goalkeeper of a Premier League side. He's played a few under-23 games this season, probably just over 10, maybe less. I don't know. I don't know the exact number. But I don't know the role, what he's going to do, you know, when these bigger prospects do come back, especially Rushworth, I think is the next best thing. And people always refer to his save that he made, I think, for Worthing a couple of years ago. And it was probably one of the best saves that you'd ever see. And it went viral. It was so good. So this is a guy with huge, huge talent and huge eyes on him as well. So for McGill, where's that next step for him? Does he move on to a championship club? You know, I always wonder of the role of the third choice goalkeeper, but Jason Steele will know that role quite well. He played that role for sort of 3-4 years before getting that call up from De Zerbi last season. So, I think that they must be looking over their shoulders as to who might come back from loan and who might stay at the club and sort of push them out of their current job role. But I think for McGill as well, surely he's got a little bit more ambition about him to want to go and be a number one somewhere and, you know, make a career out of what he wants to do. Because I don't know how long you stay a number three for, especially at the age he is.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Premier League salaries are Premier League salaries. I'm sure there is some difference. I don't know how, you know, being down the depth chart compares with being a starter at a lower level. But I suspect it's, you know, yes, everyone wants game time. But being at the highest level is being at the highest level, especially if you're a tick away. I think you're right. Being a third choice goalkeeper means you're not going to see a lot of time. And then once you're out of that ability to play with the second team, you're like looking around, what is my role here? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see both with McGill and I think with Steele too, do they move on in the summer and do we, you know, bring in one of our new keepers to be the second choice? Or do we stick with Steele, you know, as a second choice or maybe a dual second choice with a new keeper in the fold? I guess time will tell this summer.
And it's going to be a big summer as well, and something that we'll probably touch on towards the end of the show, because I think we have spoken since with the big profits were announced, but something that we want to dabble in a little bit more, because I think there's a lot of beef to talk about this summer. There's a lot of meat to get stuck into and really think about where this club's going to go next, because a lot of people are sort of feeling very negative, thinking the club's taken 2 or 3 steps back this season. And, you know, where do we go next season if we haven't got Europe? Are we still going to be a big enough pool? But I think that's something we're getting to sort of towards the end of the show. Tells you how much we don't want to talk about the game, because we've been talking about what is Tom McGill's role. Let's get into the game, Dagan. The first half was incredibly frustrating. Now, I was on a Burnley podcast a couple of days before the game, and I sort of said what we struggle against is a low block. If you do that and just hit us on the counter, you will have joy. But Burnley didn't come out in a low block, did they? They came to play. So do you give them some credit there?
I give them a lot of credit. And they had everything to gain, right? I mean, both of us, interestingly enough, were in a similar position. They're fighting to avoid relegation. We're fighting to avoid missing Europe, more positively to reach Europe, and more positive for them to stay in the Premier League. The draw was satisfying to no one, so they weren't content to sit back and try to eke out a draw or to hit us on the counter. Fair play to them. I really, as bad as it was in the final third for both teams in the first half, it was otherwise a pretty enjoyable game to watch. In the middle of the park, where both teams were, you know, fighting for the ball, winning the ball in the middle of the pitch, I thought we were attempting to be much more direct, even in the first half, which led to a lot of the giveaways that may have seemed needless in the context of, you know, Brighton's beautiful football. But I thought in earnest was in an effort to create a goal scoring opportunity in ways that we've really struggled to do lately. When we did those opportunities, we just didn't do a whole lot with them, including early in the second half, where, gosh, I thought for sure we would have a couple of chances and we didn't even get shots away. I think it was Welbeck on the first and a dinger on the second, or maybe no, I mean, I'm reversing that. It was a dinger on the first and Welbeck on the second, where it just seemed like, oh, surely we're going to get a shot on goal here, maybe a good one, and we didn't even get a shot away, which there were some nice defensive efforts. Pretty hefty shirt pull on the Adingra on the second angle. On the initial angle, I thought, great challenge, all clean. Second time around, I saw it. I saw like, oh, there's a pretty sizable shirt pull, but I think Adingra went down too easily, and there's no call. We're on the road. We're not going to see that. But yeah, what was your take on the first half?
Just really frustrating, because I think the expectations have risen for what you expect a Brighton performance to be. And I think they've risen correctly. I think people should expect more from their team. They should expect us to go to Burnley and really control the game and sort of have the better chances. But again, you really have to look at the context of the season and when we're playing them, because 3 points for them today would have been absolutely huge. It would have taken up to 22 points, I think, 3 points off of Luton, and then a point or two off of Nottingham Forest. So they would have had a massive, massive, massive chance to stay up had they have beaten us. And I think you have to give them credit for coming and playing a game and taking it to us. I think that the really frustrating thing that I took out the first half was obviously Pervis Stupinian's injury and us having to bring on Igor, because I think with a fully fit and flying Pervis Stupinian, you get a fantastic fullback who's going to charge you up the pitch. I just don't think he's been that this season. And I don't know if he's been playing at sort of 70, 80% and whether he's fully fit, because these injuries seem to be happening so easily. And someone pointed out that they believe that only his injury against Ajax and today and March's injury have been the only big injuries that have happened on the pitch, and all of the other ones have been from training, I believe. I can't recall any other big injuries happening sort of off the pitch. So I think it's quite concerning as to what's happening in training. I want to know what's going on there. I think a lot of people have questioned that a lot of the teams that are having the injury crises right now are the teams that competed in the summer series. So is there something in the US water there, Dagan, that we should be knowing about? Bring back to Brighton to do a test on, because it just seems like Newcastle have sort of like 14 injuries. We're up to 10 now. And João Pedro was hobbling as well. That was extremely fearful, because I thought, he's just come back and he's going to go off again. It's just frustrating, right, to see a Stupinian go off and our injuries grow yet again.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are questions to be asked, and I'm certainly not the one to answer them at this point, about just the additional football being played year-round for all of these guys. And if our training methods have stayed the same over the time that, games have crept up and up and up. We certainly know for Brighton, games have crept up. But for a lot of clubs, guys are playing roughly the same number of games. So the international schedule demands, the additional cup matches, the league matches. And then you're looking at, Champions League, European leagues, adding another two games to every team that enters. It's more. It's pretty logical conclusion that the more you're out there, hour by hour, the chance of getting injured are greater. But I think we're seeing, a greater impact than what would simply be a math problem of X number of hours equals X number of injuries or Y number of injuries. It seems worse than that. And so I'm not sure of how this cumulative effect is taking its toll, but it certainly seems to be the case. What I would say that is interesting to me is that Brighton has rotated our players much more than a lot of other teams. Now, we've seen injuries catch up with Villa, for example, late in the season in ways that it didn't early in the season when they weren't rotating their players and we were ours. My thought about the over-rotation early in the year, and I think I said this in our chat earlier, the injuries are going to come given the context of football as we know it right now. And so play your best players when you have them, because regardless of how much you're saving them for, you know, to prevent injury, it seems like that doesn't really work. Guys are getting hurt no matter how much we rest them or don't rest them. And I think that seems to be true across the board. So yeah, hindsight's 2020, and yeah, I look back at some of the games we drew where I feel like we put out a weaker team because the thought was, well, we're saving guys and trying to keep them healthy, but that didn't happen. Like, we didn't keep guys healthy. We just kept getting injured no matter how much we seemed to rest players.
Yeah. Do you think that then in turn puts more pressure on the players that are fit and the players that you do expect to be starting every game for Brighton, like Pascal Gross, like Simon Adingra, like João Pedro? Does that put more pressure on them to perform because they know that they've got a weaker team around them?
I don't know. I haven't been a professional athlete. I was a college athlete. The idea of more pressure to me is really almost foreign. I just feel like the way you internalize and experience pressure in sport, it's sort of either you experience it or you don't. Yes, if there's a really, really big moment that's pivotal to get you advanced to a next level, like, yes, you're going to feel it, right? If you're playing the FA Cup semifinals, you feel more pressure because of the moment. But I don't know about game to game of, you know, this guy's injured or that guy's injured. If individual athletes feel a ton more pressure, I think if they're being asked to do something outside of their normal role, then sure, maybe they're a little less comfortable with that particular thing. But, you know, no one's being asked to take corner kicks. That's still Pascal Gross all year long, no matter whether it's the first man or, you know, it was a pass to the goalkeeper or is hit into the abyss. It's still Pascal Gross taking the corners. Sorry, subtle dig, not so subtle dig at Pascal. But man, I would love to see somebody else take a corner kick once in a while. Just try it, see what happens. We're good. We're good here. That maybe lead us to another point. I don't know. When you asked that question, do you have thoughts? You feel like that pressure is wearing on our guys, or yeah, what led you to ask that?
I think it's knowing that, you know, Pascal Gross is one of the most creative players for Brighton over the last 5-6 seasons, and has been absolutely fantastic for us. One of the biggest chance creators outside of the top six. We know all of his numbers. We know how influential he is the way we play. I just think about it staying a bit stale because they're the only players that have the reputation to come into our side and to be the first name on the team sheet, or to be the person that you think look to and go, thank God they're starting, thank God they're starting, thank God they're starting, because they can do something for us. So when they don't do something for us, you're calling on fringe players and inexperienced players to step up to the plate, which I know you have to do as a Premier League squad. You have to have a squad big enough and strong enough to compete when these freak injury situations do happen. I just worry that sort of Pascal takes to the field and thinks, if I have an absolute stinker here, everyone's going to have an absolute stinker. Or if Simon Adingra's off it, we've got no width. If João Pedro's coming in, is he starting instead of Welbeck? That takes another dynamic out of our side. We've just got so many limited options at the moment. And I had a discussion with someone on Twitter, X, however you want to call it, about plan B and about De Zerbi having no plan B. I commented back saying he's starting with his plan B. He's got 10 big, big, big players out that he can't call upon. Solly March would be in there every time. Matoma would be in there every time. And Ciso would be an impact player off the bench. Need I go on? Like, I just feel like we're having to start with De Zerbi's plan B and adapt as we go on. And people are saying De Zerbi's not adapting. De Zerbi's not doing this. De Zerbi's not doing that. Look at the resources he's got before you start questioning the man.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think you're right in that he's starting with personnel plan B. I think the critique that comes his way is because he doesn't come with a tactical plan B, even though he has personnel plan B. It's like when we have the preferred personnel, the system is tailor-made for those guys. And we have the right personnel to implement Deserve Ball in a way that is beautiful and attractive and produces goals, might hemorrhage a few on the other end, but does typically produce goals and a lot of really good chances. When we don't have the right pieces, you know, for example, not having a single winger on the pitch, which has been the case when we didn't have a Dingra at points this year, when he was in AFCON. But we insisted upon sort of trying to play the same possession-based style where we dominated the ball but really didn't produce much at all in the center of the park because defenses could load up in the center of the park because we didn't really offer a lot of threat out wide because we didn't have any pace out there. I mean, we had, you know, Gross floating around as a winger. We had Milner as a winger at points this year. We've tried Lamptey at a winger, and while he is pacey, he doesn't really do a whole lot with the ball at his feet. Yeah, I mean, it's just – it has been plan B in terms of personnel. I think we've been short on adaptation. I haven't seen us try to play directly through the middle the way we did today. I thought that was one of the positive takeaways, is it looked like a little bit of adaptation today instead of just trying to, you know, play it up the flank. We did in fact bring the ball into the middle more, I thought. You know, João Pedro, when he's wide, I think because he is a more central player, typically drifts into the center of the park more. And so that probably initiates some of that action, because he doesn't just hold his width out on the outside. He's just all over the place. But I mean, I think we look at our season, and I know these numbers are there. I ran them all. I haven't run them lately, but Ferguson has been out. But the numbers with Ferguson and João Pedro together were incredible in terms of our goal production. I mean, we're approaching, you know, 2.5 goals a game with those guys out there. We have really not been great without both. We were even worse without João Pedro as a single player. But really, we've looked our best with those two in tandem. And we've done that, even we had those two guys available, we've done it very little, which is another place where I feel like, you know, De Zerbe hasn't adjusted. Is he a great manager? Yes. We talked about this in the chat. I do think he's a little bit inflexible. And, you know, whether it's injury prevention, whether it's a personnel choice, whether it's young guys who, when we see them, appear ready, but the narrative that we hear is they're not ready. I mean, Baleba was not ready all season. He's looked like our best, if not certainly one of our best, if not the best guy on the pitch for what has he been out the past, you know, 3 or 4 games consecutively. Mm-hmm. Did he make a mistake today? Sure. But I think like everything that he brought us with that one mistake, and it was granted, it was a catastrophic mistake for the result today. But our opponents made a catastrophic mistake and gave away a goal too. So that sort of evened itself out. But his tracking back and disrupting play, I mean, yeah, so much that he does well that we just don't have a replacement for. I wish we could have seen more of him with the rest of our best team. And again, I don't know. I feel like we're overly critical, but I think it's fair to say maybe we didn't get the best out of what we had available. I think your point is really, really well made. We very rarely had our best available guys over the course of this year, which lessens the disappointment to me in part about the overall season.
Yeah, and I think when the season does end, it will be something that we look back on as a full-on perspective and look at the injuries that happened at key moments, having João Pedro out, obviously, for the round of 16 in the Europa League. Would it have made much of a difference? He could have taken more of those chances that we created at the Roma stadium. But the argument I make back with regards personnel plan B and tactical plan B is that if you're playing with your personnel plan B, how much does that limit you tactically plan B if you've got a certain way of playing with De Zerbe? He does operate one or two different systems. It's not like he's completely one-dimensional in what he tries. We see back threes, we see back fives in possession, out of possession. We see back fours. We see a number 10 supporting a striker. We see Facundo Buonanotte floating in that role. So there are different types of players and different tactics that De Zerbi does try to implement based on who we're playing. So I don't know if, again, the injuries are such a huge limitation because of, you know, what cards does he have to play? That's what my main point is at the moment with people is, like, if you look at De Zerbi's hand, what can he play? What can he do differently?
Yeah, again, I think that's fair. I mean, I think one thing we've seen lately, as we've scored fewer goals, we've also conceded fewer, and I think we've held back. I think we've been a little more conservative in sending our fullbacks forward up the pitch. I think we've played more back three because we weren't going to send both sides forward and leave ourselves with two guys at the back. We've done a lot less of that in the back half of the season. It hasn't yielded great results in goal scoring, but I think we have been overall less leaky than we were at some points of the season. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I do think it's a little bit of an adjustment. Again, I think it's an adjustment that maybe had we made earlier. Yeah, I don't know. It's easy to critique after the fact. You know, the things that I've been on about for most of the year, liking to see more of our young players, wishing we saw more of João Pedro and Ferguson together. Those are things I've talked about before games. I hate the armchair, you know, quarterback after the game, naming all the things that could have been done differently. But those are things I think I've talked about pretty, you know, regularly, just because I think we lack clinical finishing quality in the center of the park when we don't have Ferguson and Pedro together. Welbeck, you know, for me is just not. Does he have a few great moments in him? Sure. I think he's past his best football. I hate to say that about our players, but I think we have a couple of guys on this team who just aren't bringing top six, top eight level play on an everyday basis, but they are everyday players. Milner was not an everyday player, but he played most of our games in that middle patch of the year before he got hurt. And I don't think he was a real asset. Lallana played a half of many of our games. I don't think he was a huge asset. Welbeck has been our go-to striker. When you look at starting strikers across the Premier League and Welbeck's results over the past 2 years, he has not produced like a starting striker. And you know, that it's tough to win games when you don't have one of those guys. When you look at Chelsea's struggles, right? I mean, it's been in large part because they haven't had clinical finishing from the striker position. It's just hard to produce, you know, results. Arsenal is a little bit of an exception there, where they've sort of been, you know, goal scoring by committee, but that they also have a huge payroll and an incredibly deep and talented team with lots of goal scoring options that we don't really possess. One of their goal scoring options is a player that we cut bait with and sent their way in the middle of last season. And he's done quite well for them with some, you know, some key plays along the way. Our friend Leo Trossard. I don't know. I see both sides, which probably isn't pleasing for anyone to hear, but I do see both sides. I see we could be better. But I also see, as you're pointing out, like, what could we have reasonably expected to do with all that's gone against us this year? And it's a fair question.
I think when you really, really look at it in detail, it's like you can see Roberto De Zerbi trying new things. You can see him trying to adapt with the squad that he's got available to him with a very limited time left this season to implement something new. It took him a little bit of time to implement his style when he first came into the job. It wasn't instant results. And yeah, we scored three at Anfield in his first game, but it did take time. So I think as much as De Zerbi has to adapt, the players have to adapt at the same time. And I think it's quite a difficult thing to line up at the same time. I think it's quite a hard thing for a manager to get his points across and then to say, right, go out against Burnley and do exactly what I just said, even though that's different to what we've done last week. So I think if you really do look at the details, that there are slight changes that we can see, like you say, with conceding less goals, being a little bit more compact, being a little bit more sort of, he's the word, boring, and just trying to grind out results at a really important time of the season, because, yeah, it is exactly that right now. It's crunch time. And if we want Europe next season, it's not completely off the cards. People are saying it is, and people are saying the season's done. I'm pretty much in the season's done camp. I know you're not going to like that, Dagan. but like you said before we started recording, I'll let you do the numbers, actually. You tell people what point were we at last season and where are we at now?
So as we sit, and we're not at the end of game week 33, though we're almost there. We are 6 points. I guess this will be true. We will be 6 points out of sixth place at the end of game week 33. Last year, at the end of game week 33, we were 5 points out of sixth place, which ultimately is where we finished. Now, there are some other factors in there. We had some games in hand at that juncture. But late in the season, we were a couple of results off of where we needed to be. We found those results. Now, was our form as good? Is our form as good this year as it was last? You know, we don't feel that way. And I think that's probably fair. We've not looked really good in a fairly long time, frankly, through most of 2024. But, you know, sports are fickle. Momentum is fickle. You know, you find something somewhere, and all of a sudden things are very different. Who knows? Who knows what we produce against City? We've played a couple of really, really attractive games against City. Maybe we produce some kind of a result there, and that changes our fates. And we say, like, no, really, we are, you know, a tough team when we play our very best. Look what we just did against the best team in the world. Or maybe the flip scripts, you know, away at Bournemouth following that, and we you know, a team we're battling with. I mean, we still play Bournemouth, Chelsea, Man U, and Newcastle, right? Four of the teams that we're battling with in those European spots, we have games against. So, I mean, those are all six-pointer type games where we get a result, things can change. Again, I understand the pessimism. I understand why there hasn't been a lot to give us hope. Going into the second half today, I had a lot of it. I'll return question to you, Joe. We haven't talked about the second half, really. How did you feel about the second half, how we came out? Did you notice any discernible difference from the first? We probably should wrap up our Burnley game discussion.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Before we get sidetracked into something else. Obviously, it was a very, 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 very funny goal to score. And it couldn't have been handed to us better. I don't know what Juric was doing. If that had been Jason Steele or Bart Verbruggen, there would have been calls for their heads, I would imagine, from our fan base, because we know how they react. I think you saw, again, a team that are fighting for a European spot, trying to get a grip of the game whilst battling with a team that are fighting for their lives down at the bottom. And I think that's a very weird contrast to put into a game, and it just makes for there were moments where we played our beautiful football. There was some lovely one-touch passing moves that produced some really good chances that we definitely should have done better with, but the majority of the game for me was just frustrating and scrappy and just a real battle. And I think any Brighton fan that has been watching long enough or you know, has watched a lot of football knows that if you go to Turf Moor, it's not going to be an easy walkover at all, especially with the football that company has them playing. I think the way Burnley performed today was not a true reflection of the league table. It's crazy that they haven't picked up more points playing that way. So we absolutely have to give credit to Burnley. But again, when you look at us, you look in a mirror, you have to say you've got to do better in these games. You've got to go and put these teams to the sword and make a claim. And I just don't think we sort of got that opportunity to really put a, a stamp on the game or a stamp on the league table today. And I think it's going to be a missed opportunity when we look back at the Burnley home game, the Sheffield United home game, the Burnley away game, all of these games that we've drawn, Everton at home as well. We're just going to be incredibly frustrated with ourselves. And yeah, there's lots of missed opportunities this season, which I think is going to be a brand for this whole season, just missed opportunity.
Yeah, the season of disappointing draws. That's been my mantra all year. I just feel like that spell in the middle of the season where we hit, you know, a number of draws that just felt like losses, it's hard to recover from those. I think in many ways, those are more gut punches than the devastating defeat where you just feel like we got outplayed. Even the, you know, 4-0 to Luton, it just felt like they were a juggernaut that day, right? Like everything went their way and they pounded us. Similar to the Everton game last year, where we lost 5-1. I mean, that happens, and it happens even to good teams, but it's just when you have this perpetual, like, man, we just can't seem to eke out a close one. It's just painful. It is really and truly painful. I felt with every fiber of my being, for whatever reason, that we were going to find a way through today. And when that, you know, ball went backwards from Baleba, and ricocheted into the goal, I just, you know, head in hands moment, just soul crushing, because it didn't feel like in the second half they produced a lot of really great chances. In the first, they had a couple that felt like they should have been goals. I mean, both teams, I think, left a lot on the far post. Balls that came through as really excellent crosses that had someone found their way onto the end of could have been goals. And the defending being lackluster at the far post wasn't punished for both teams. You expect that of a team sitting 19th. You would hope for better, perhaps, from us. But just not all the parts clicking together, which, again, byproduct of injury, maybe byproduct of not playing consistent lineups more when we had the chance to. That's a fair question, too. Do we get man of the match portion, Joe? Or are we just going to salt this one away? Disappointing draw, leave it at that. What more do we have to talk about for this game? Do you have more you want to say?
I don't know. I don't know if I've got anything more to say on the game. I think we've just been incredibly lucky to come out of the game with something. I think we could have still been playing now and not scored an open play. Like, you know, if you span a game over 5 hours, there's every chance that we would have got a penalty or something. But honestly, I think we could still be playing right now and not score. So it's just, yeah, it's concerning when you're looking a little bit toothless, and when those chances do fall, that you're wasting them and blazing them over the bar, or not hitting it straight at the keeper, or not hitting it hard enough and stuff like that. It's just really, really frustrating. And you see the club posting midweek, oh, look, Ansu Fati's on fire in training and he's planting balls in the far corner here, there and everywhere. And then as soon as he gets onto the pitch, he looks like he couldn't, you know, hit a ball harder than 10 mile an hour. Was really frustrating. And, you know, when you're calling for players to come off the bench and change the game, and you've got, I thought, I just don't think our bench did enough. But I think what we do have to do is give a shout out to the youngster Marco Maini for coming off the bench and making a little bit of a stamp on the game and showing that he could well be a very capable Premier League player in months to come, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say I didn't make as much note of him, and I'm not sure even what minute he came on. For me, the standout among the subs was Bordonate. I thought he looked up for it. I think he's been one of our better players over the back half of the season. I'm certainly not, you know, the top maybe handful, but certainly, you know, if you're putting together a who's your first 11 of the second half among the guys who've been healthy, I think he deserves a place there. Yeah. Just because he's been relentless, dogged, aggressive, not afraid of a take on. And he creates opportunities. And yeah, I feel like we're lacking for guys who just can do something with the ball in space. Baleba really impressed me, I guess, on the half turn today. I found him found him really checking his shoulders and feeling out when he had time to turn and take the ball up the pitch. And I think, yeah, he's going to find an assist here soon with those drives up the field. Just wish it would have been today.
Yeah. I guess in true Albion obsessed fashion, Dagan, we're going to have to do player of the match. So who is your Albion player of the match for the 1-1 draw against Burnley?
If not for the gift of a goal, it would probably be Baleba. It's a tough, it's maybe the hardest game for me. You could make a shout for Bart. My medal stand is probably Bart, Baleba, and Motor. I think I'm going to give it to Motor. That free kick was maybe our most threatening moment. And I just thought he did well all around. I don't have a good answer, and that's probably the least confident I've ever been in one of these. But I'm going to give it to Motor. Who's your pick? Give me a whole medal stand, Joe. I want to hear your medal stand.
Medal stand. Oh, I've never done one of these before, Dagan. You put me on the spot. Okay, so my medal stand would be Carlos Baleba in third. No. I'm going to change that. I'm going to say Jakob Moda third, Carlos Baleba second, and first, he wasn't even wearing a Brighton shirt. I give it to Muric.
Oh, that's a cop out. Come on.
Okay. Right. So
that's fair. I mean, does that mean Baleba gets your?
Baleba gets my. Yeah, he gets my gold medal. Moda with silver.
And so he gets man of the match for both teams then.
Yeah, go on then. Why not?
Oh gosh, what a painful, disappointing draws. But we go again, and like I said, I think we just have to find some results against these teams who are competing with us for position. That those are the games that are going to end up mattering the most. Bournemouth has been tough. They just drew with United today. That's going to be a tough one on the heels of Man City.
It's going to be incredibly tough end to the season. I think we've got to play. So only one of the teams that we're playing is below us right now, which is a little bit of a scary prospect. Yeah, so Bournemouth are below us. Everyone else that we're playing is above us. Going to be a very, very tough end to the season for sure. And there's still points up for grabs. I think that's what people have to remember. The season isn't done as much as we might mentally think it is. De Zerbi hasn't left yet, so let's enjoy him whilst he's here. And he might even still be here next season. The Athletic did report that confidence is growing, that Roberto De Zerbi will still be the Albion manager next season. It's going to be one heck of a merry-go-round this summer, isn't it, Dagan?
It is, right? We've got money burning a hole in our pocket, so that's easy to feel good about, right? It will be interesting to see where we spend the money, how many sort of typical Brighton developmental players we bring in for the long game, and it will be especially interesting to see how many, João Pedro-like, closer to ready now players, if not fully ready now players, we bring in. Some of that may hinge on whether De Zerbi stays or goes. If De Zerbi stays and we feel like he's our guy, I would have to think that we give him a little bit more direct input on at least a couple of the signings for him to say, give him $50 million and say, how do you want to spend this $50 million? We're going to leave this up to you. If these are not guys who ever appreciate in value, but they are going to help us win, let's do it. I would rather do that than, what we did this year and go pursue a loanee that is a rehab project. That just was a tremendous risk. Now, I know all it cost us was the money we were paying in salary, but yeah, given what we've ended up with in reserves, would have loved to, as we've said before, have stretched ourselves for a Palmer, or Kudus, I feel less so, because if he was holding out for a small release clause, there was just no way we were going to do that. But yeah, left-footed right winger has just been the biggest hole, I think, for me. And obviously, experienced, you know, CDM type. It'll be interesting to see. Do we go get another CDM? Right now, we still only have one, and that's Baleba. What happens with Pascal Gross? Does he want to go back to Germany now? Or is he going to stay for another year or two before he starts his retirement back to Germany tour? I mean, that's a real thing that's going to happen eventually. Do we hang on to Purvis, or does he move along? Do we hang on to Adam Webster, or does he find an opportunity with, you know, a team that's coming up to the Premier League, or maybe a championship side? Same question for Steele. There are a lot of unanswered questions going into this offseason. Will Lamptey be a Brighton player at this time next year, or even in January? Yeah, lots of questions. And then who will be those targets that we pursue? Follow the transfer rumor tracker up soon to keep tabs on that. What are your thoughts, man? How are you feeling? I remain ever optimistic. I know you're a little bluer. Our prognosis.
I'm bluer over this season. I think I'm done with this season now. I want us to look at the summer transfer window. I want us to open that war chest of money that we've got, as you say, burning a hole in Tony Bloom's pocket right now, because it's been quoted that he wants a big summer transfer window. So let's do it. Let's go. Let's see who we bring in. I'm really excited for next season. So I don't want the fact that I'm a little bit more down about this season to sort of jar that. I'm very excited for where this club's going to go. And I think people have to know that we are the best run football club, arguably, in the world right now. And I had an argument with someone. I couldn't believe it. A Brighton fan saying that we're not the best run football club in the league, and that the best run football club is the team that win the league. That's not the case. They're financially backed by a massive state, billionaires, trillionaires even. They've got the money to bring in Haaland, De Bruyne, people like that to win them the league. Liverpool backed by big money. Arsenal backed by big money. So we are still the best club in the country right now in terms of how we're run. And if anyone doesn't trust what Tony Bloom and Paul Barber are doing at the helm of this football club, they really need to give their heads a wobble, because we're in the healthiest position a football club could ever be in. People still saying, we're the next Leicester, we're the next Southampton. To that I say, shut your mouths. No, we are not. Look at the state that they were in. Look at the state that we are in. It is much, much healthier than that.
Yeah, I mean, the long-range perspective taking here too, you know, last year was our best ever season, finishing fifth. We went to Europe. We won our group, a tough group. We could fall theoretically as far as 13th, which would be our third best season ever. That's how far we've fallen. It would be our second largest drop from year to year under Tony Bloom, but it would still be our third best season ever. The same would be true if we finished 10th or 11th or 12th. If we finished 9th, which I think is still very much possible. I think 10th is probably the most likely position, but I still think anywhere in that, you know, truly 6 to 13 range is still possible. Do I think 6 is likely at all? No, I don't, because I just think the number of points when we're 6 points back and the teams ahead of us, though they have lots of games against each other and us against them, it just seems unlikely that all of the teams will fall back to us. Certainly someone will surge forward, but I think it's not unreasonable that we could find 8th. It really isn't. If we win some of these head-to-heads, you know, I know it doesn't seem likely that we will, but it's still very much in play that we could. and we could be talking about, hey, this was our second best season ever. And how, like, how dire have things become if, you know, we fall back to that level? Like, not that dire. Like, the future is bright. The prophet you just named is real. The sky is not falling at Brighton. Like, it's just not. We've been, you know, hit by a bevy of injuries, the likes of which we could be talking about. We're in a relegation scrap because of all these injuries. But the team building that's happened has allowed us to at least stay where we are, still in the top 10. We may fall out of the top 10, but as of right now, we haven't been out of the top 10 in the entire time that I've been a Brighton fan, going on 2 years now. We haven't been outside of the top 10. So the Brighton I know is a perennial top 10 team, on its way to being always a top 10 team and better. There's your optimism for the day, Joe. What else do you have before we reach the hour mark?
I think exactly that, Dagan. I think you summed it up perfectly. I think we've given this podcast a little bit of justice at the end and given a little bit of positivity and back into the Brighton world, back into the Brighton space, and think forward to next season. And, you know, still think about what we've got left this season, because there's a lot left. I think the word I want to end on, and I don't want to be the Brighton fan that says, look how far we've come, this, that, and the other. All I'll say is perspective. That is it. So, yeah, thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Albion Obsessed podcast. It's been quite fun to sort of dissect that and get out any lingering anger that we may have had or anything along those lines. But if you have enjoyed, please do remember to like, share, and subscribe for more Albion related content. If you like football shirts as much as I do, I know you do. I know you do, Dagan, for sure. You want to go to onekloppshop.com, enter code ALBIONOBSESSED at checkout, and get yourself 10% off. 10% off. There we go. So, yeah, all that's left for me to say, Tom, I'll do you proud. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you next time. Take care.